So I think there's a lot of beauty that sort of comes in with combining interests from different areas. I think you can generate some really interesting questions that way. And research is really about the process. It's really about the finding out how to ask a question and how to go about answering it. It's sort of that joy of discovery and learning, right? So it's not necessarily about a specific idea, but it's about how to answer questions and come up with ideas in general.
Hi, I'm Madison.
I'm Alex.
And I'm Emily.
And we're your hosts of Office Hours.
What's Office Hours, Alex?
Good question, Emily. Office Hours is a monthly podcast produced by us, your peer research coaches, at the Huron University Library. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Office Hours. My name is Alex, your host of today's episode. I'm joined today by Melissa Mead, an assistant professor and our newest full-time faculty here in the psychology department. She has numerous academic publications. Her research primarily looks at the act of drawing and its influences on memory and the biological processes associated with aging and cognitive decline. I've personally had the pleasure of working with her in her cognition and aging course, as well as a research assistant for her work. Melissa, this is a pretty familiar setting, seeing as how we've done interviews for my thesis. But I just wanted to say again, thank you for your time here with us and our listeners.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. I am definitely happy to participate.
Awesome. Okay, Melissa, we can just jump right into, you know, the research journey that you've had. When did you first become interested in research, and whether that was in psychology specifically or other areas of interest?
I actually have a pretty interesting sort of academic journey that I've taken. So I did start out my undergraduate degree as a fine arts student. I intended to just do a bachelor in fine arts. But I took some psychology courses, some sociology courses, and I just found it so interesting. Like, I just wanted to know more and more. I just wanted to sort of keep reading and keep discovering. So I just took more psychology courses and ended up doing a double major. I stuck around and did an honors thesis. And then I just sort of happened to get into grad school. I think I was not very confident at the time that I would, but I did. So I went, and I've just sort of been researching ever since. I've always kind of loved learning new things, and I think with research, with actually being able to ask your own questions and find those answers. That's something that's very exciting to me.
That's really fascinating, Melissa. I think it's really fun to learn about our faculty members not necessarily having gone straight into psychology or come with the intent to do that. So I appreciate you sharing that with us. And, you know, speaking of having these double majors, right, like in fine arts and in psychology, I wonder how that has influenced maybe like your research going forward. Like, how has fine arts played into the kinds of questions that you do ask in psychology?
Yeah, so I actually have done quite a bit of research looking at how drawing pictures can help to benefit our memory performance. So this is something that I was very interested in, from my personal experiences of creating art, and just that, when you're sort of like working on something, you're really encoding, like you're really sort of taking in everything that's happening around you. So later on, when, you know, you're looking back at something that you were working on, I always just found it so easy to remember and bring to mind the things that, you know, I was thinking and experiencing and feeling at the time. So in some of my work, you know, I'm specifically interested in sort of memory in general, I guess I would say. And I've done quite a bit of research showing that drawing pictures is a very, very effective encoding tool, actually. So it can help us remember information much better than many of the other strategies that we tend to use, like writing something down or trying to encode something sort of more deeply in terms of the semantic meaning. Drawing seems to be very, very effective. So I've looked at that in younger adults, in older adults, and individuals experiencing cognitive decline.
Thanks, Melissa. I really appreciate the explanation. And actually, for our audience, maybe we should clarify what your use of this term encoding means. You know, maybe let them know what encoding is.
Absolutely, yes. So we have sort of three main stages or processes of memory. So encoding basically refers to initially laying down a memory trace. It's when you're sort of taking that information in, you're encoding it. We then also have to store the information. So we have some sort of storage system for different types of information that we encode. And then the final sort of step is retrieval, when you're actually going in and accessing that information again. So when you're remembering something and pulling it out of your storage system.
Thanks for that answer. So let's go back to your experience with multiple disciplines. What would you say to students who are maybe unsure of their areas of study or are thinking about switching to something else, given that you started in the fine arts and moved into psych and kept the fine arts?
Yeah, so I think there's a lot of beauty that sort of comes in with combining interests from different areas. I think you can generate some really interesting questions that way. And research is really about the process. It's really about the finding out how to ask a question and how to go about answering it. It's sort of that joy of discovery and learning, right? So it's not necessarily about a specific idea, but it's about how to answer questions and come up with ideas in general. That's one of my favorite things about research, is that you can ask any type of question, right? You're not ever really confined to just one idea or just one question. So it's really about that process. Once you've kind of learned how to engage in that research process, then, you know, the door is open for the types of questions that you want to answer.
Awesome. I really appreciate that answer, Melissa. And that actually makes me think about research philosophies and methodologies. So, you know, as you know, here in our psych program, you know, the focus is mostly on quantitative experimental research philosophies, which I understand quantitative research, but it's never really personally been my strength. So I'm curious about what you think about what you might say to people who are in psychology, but are maybe struggling with the heavy quantitative focus of research and feel like they want to explore other kinds of research.
Yeah, absolutely. So to tack on to that, there are many different ways you can go about answering a question. And we do have standard approaches that we take within each discipline. And within psychology, it does tend to be a lot of sort of experimental manipulation and then quantitative data collection and analysis. But those aren't the only ways to answer questions, right? You can do qualitative sort of analyses. There are so many other sort of approaches that you can take. And once you kind of learn the general process of how to engage in research, you can go out and you can learn about the particulars of some of these procedures or methods and apply them within that sort of general research framework, right? So there's always the ability to learn new ways of doing things, to learn more. I primarily did a quantitative sort of data collection and analysis during my PhD, but then afterwards moved on to doing more sort of complex analyses that are sort of at the interplay of qualitative and quantitative. You're never really confined to having to do things one way, right? There's always the ability to learn and grow.
Amazing. Thanks, Melissa. So we've heard a bit about your journey in psychology, experiences in research, and you've even given some advice for our students. I guess I'm curious, and I imagine many of our listeners are too, what your day-to-day life is like as a professor. How do you balance your teaching and your research, office hours, service work, and of course, your own personal life?
Yeah, so I think that's one of the things that I really, really like and appreciate about academia is that there is so much sort of variability and flexibility in terms of both your day-to-day, but also, you know, how things look at different points in the year. So, when it's during like a fall or winter academic term, my day-to-day is really sort of shaped by what my teaching schedule happens to be that term. So sometimes I'll have teaching days where I'm mostly focused on being in class and prepping for lecture. And then that leaves open other days where I can focus on, you know, the multitude of other sort of tasks that I do. So various aspects of research and service in the university. And then in the summer, I really, really love that sort of flexibility and freedom to choose what it is that I'm going to be focusing on each day. If it's a day that I feel like I can write a lot versus a day that maybe I want to spend time looking at data, you know, for example.
Wow, it's really valuable to hear that you have this sort of freedom or like flexibility throughout your day. It sounds like things can get pretty hectic depending on the time of the year. My next question is about that transition from being a student to a postdoc to being a professor. I know this is your third year as a full-time faculty member here at Huron. You're a newest faculty member in psych. I'm curious what it was like for you when you moved here from your postdoc and how you've adapted to meet the challenges that have come of it.
Yeah, so I think during grad school, near the end, you do start to have to do this sort of balancing act more and more, right? You are expected to do a lot of research and you're expected to be involved in your community in various ways. So sort of the number of different types of tasks that you take on, that starts to increase. So you get a little bit better at balancing all of these things. I got more experience doing that during my postdoc. I was a postdoc at University of Toronto for a couple of years prior to coming here. So I think it felt really like a continuation of all of that sort of experience that I'd been building up in terms of balancing a number of different sort of things, right? Of course, when you become a faculty member, you also have to take on more teaching and more service responsibilities, so that balancing act gets a little bit more complicated. So it's been sort of stressful at points where I've had to, you know, sometimes you have to focus more of your energy on one of those domains and you can't expect that you're going to be able to give 100% of yourself to everything. So it's sort of adapting to being able to give as much of yourself as needed without wearing yourself too thin, right? So that sort of gets more and more complicated as other things pop up in life. I recently had a baby.
Congratulations.
Also, thank you. So also adapting to, or sort of adding in another ball to that balancing act, a whole other human life to take care of, also really makes things more challenging.
Yeah, I'm here just trying to finish my thesis and I only have two other classes and I'm struggling. So I can only imagine like having a child in the middle of that. And I know people who, you know, were my age and had that similar situation. I just don't know how they did it. Somehow they did. I don't think I could. So that's pretty amazing.
Thank you. Yes, it's certainly a challenge, but a worthwhile one, right? So I think really something to keep in mind when you're trying to balance all of these things is to give yourself a little bit of grace, right? Like you don't have to do everything perfect. Like you have to sort of change your standards a little bit. And that's okay. That's okay to do.
Yeah, I appreciate you saying that. I know I've received some, they weren't bad marks in classes, but they weren't as high as I maybe expected of myself. But I think one of my friends told me, you know, that's the best you could do in that moment. And that's like you said, it's okay. Like, it's not, doesn't have to define you. Like a 70% in something, which is still a good mark, by the way, is not a reflection of your capability or value as a person. So I think I do appreciate you speaking to that. And one other question I have actually about this whole balancing act is, you know, as your research in memory and you know, aging and cognitive decline, does it ever feel like it's all consuming? Like, you know, you can't stop thinking about it no matter how much you do? Or is it because you have all these different things that you have to balance, you don't have a choice but to try and, you know, shut that off for a moment?
Yeah, so I think the latter there is, it really does start to apply more and more. Yeah, like when I'm with my daughter, I'm not going to be, you know, thinking about work all of the time. I don't think that's a really sustainable way to live. But I don't think it takes, you know, having a baby to achieve that balance, right? I think that's something that is good to work towards no matter where you are in your life. This sort of reminds me of a time during grad school where I was sort of all consumed by my work, like constantly thinking about things I needed to do, about my research, about, you know, these ideas that I had. And it can burn you out, right? When you're just sort of constantly focusing your energy in that one domain of your life. I will say, for anyone sort of interested in going to grad school, it is pretty common to, after the first couple of years, when you're maybe partway through, to hit a period where you feel a bit of burnout, because that is sort of built into the academic culture, is that you should sort of be obsessed with your work and like constantly working. And I think maybe that works for some people. But I don't know how healthy it is or sustainable it is sort of in the long term, right? I think it's healthy to sort of have a balance in your life. I remember feeling as a student that any time that I wasn't working, I would feel so guilty, that feeling like I should be working. But that's not healthy for you, and that isn't beneficial for your work either. So during grad school, I did put a great deal of effort into trying to have more of that balance more intentionally. So to try not to work on the weekend or in the evenings, and to not feel bad about it, because you need to have that restoration to then you'd be able to pour your energy into work the next day. So I would just say, sort of in general, that work-life balance, I think, is really important. It's not sustainable in the long term to, you know, be on the work grind 24/7.
Thanks, Melissa. Yeah, I mean, I agree that it's really important to try and find or make space for things outside of academia, or at least to not feel compelled to always be working on something, especially if you don't have the means or the energy to do that. You know, I really appreciate you sharing that. We have to do our best to take care of ourselves. So moving on to our last section here, which is on supporting undergrad research. You know, we've worked together for the past roughly year and a half, 2 years on your research. And I can speak to my experience, which has been great, by the way. But I think our listeners would love to hear how you feel about student faculty research. How did you establish these relationships when you were a student, and why is it important to support undergraduate research initiatives?
Yeah, so I think it can be really scary as an undergraduate student, especially trying to get into the research world. I know a lot of students are very hesitant to reach out to faculty to talk to us about research. So the biggest piece of advice I would have is don't be scared to reach out. Like, we love when students reach out and they're interested in getting involved in research. I love when students just sort of stop by my office. Don't feel shy to do that. I've sort of supervised many students that, and the relationship sort of started that way, where they just kind of stopped by my office and they had an idea, or they wanted to talk about something, or they asked what they could do, how they could get involved. So I would say don't be shy to do that. But yeah, I certainly remember being in that position and feeling like maybe I wasn't qualified, or, you know, like why would they give me an opportunity? You know, we don't expect that students are going to know sort of what they're doing, right? Like I don't expect an undergraduate student to know how to conduct research and to come in with these, you know, prior knowledge and pre-existing skills. So of course, we don't expect that. So don't feel like just because you don't have those things, you're not capable, right? It's all about a learning experience. And I really like that process of taking someone on and sort of showing them how something is done, teaching them those rules and those procedures. I think that's a big part of what we do here at Huron, with getting undergraduate students involved in our research programs.
Yeah, I mean, how are you supposed to develop the research skills necessary to engage in independent research projects or work as a research assistant if you haven't had the chance to develop them? You have to develop the skills somewhere. I also try to remind other students to just go talk to their profs. You know, you might be surprised that they're people too. And also, just to clarify, I know we've had this conversation already, but you don't have any official open posts right now, right?
Yeah, I don't have any like open postings that I'm looking for, you know, a particular role at the moment. But I'm always happy to chat with people about, you know, how they might be able to get involved via volunteering to help out with a certain research project. Yeah, so I would say I don't have any like specific position opened, but I'm always happy to chat.
Okay, cool. And so what kind of advice would you give to a student who's already in a research-based working relationship with or for a supervising professor?
Yeah, I think this is a good question. So I would say don't be afraid to ask for clarification, to ask questions, to communicate when you need help with something, right? I think often students feel like they should have all of the answers, or it will look bad if they don't know how to do something, or if maybe something's gone wrong. But what you do in that position is you go to your supervisor, and they can sort of help you work through that, right? I think some students will have the tendency to want to pull away and to sort of not communicate those difficulties. But I would rather students come to me and share with me those problems that they're facing so I can help them work through it. That's really sort of the most productive way forward. And again, like we don't expect that that you have all the answers and that you know how to do everything. That wouldn't make any sense, right? So don't be afraid to go and talk and to share with your supervisor.
Thanks, Melissa. And you know, I think we're coming to the end of our time together, but I do have a few final sort of rapid fire questions. I mean, first of all, have you ever been to the Spoke?
I have a couple of times.
Okay. And do you have a go-to order? I mean, if you've only ever been a couple of times.
Probably like the most boring order ever. Just a plain black coffee.
What's your favorite animal? We've been asking this question on the podcast, although I forgot in my last interview with Caitlin and Eden. Yeah, I'd like to hear.
Oh, that's a very tough question. So I have a dog and two cats. So I don't classify myself as a dog or a cat person. I think I'm both. So I would probably say a dog and a cat.
Okay, cat dog.
Cat dog.
Okay, yeah, that's awesome. I think, yeah, I mean, you know, animals are just such beautiful creatures, and it's really hard to choose a favorite among them. So
it is.
I understand. That also sounds so super chaotic, having a dog and two cats in the house.
And a baby.
And a baby now. Yes. Oh my gosh. Okay, and this is another question. It's very open-ended, you know. If you could give like one single piece of advice to our listeners, and it doesn't really matter what it's about at all, what would you say?
That's a tough question. okay, so I would say that there isn't one way that success looks. There isn't one way to define success. You get to define your own version of success. So what that looks like for you might look different than what it looks like for other people. And I think it's really good for students to keep that in mind when you're sort of at this phase in your life where you're putting a lot of pressure on yourself to sort of achieve the most you can or keep in mind like that your life is about what you want to do with it. I think that's very important.
Awesome. That's super wholesome. And I very much agree with it. Thanks, Melissa. Okay, well, I think we're at the end of our time here. I just wanted to again thank you for all your time and like the graciousness and the thoughtfulness of your answers. I think that's it's super awesome, and like I love the opportunity for our peer, like my peers and people who come in the future to hear from our own faculty members about like their experiences. So thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. I think this is our second time where you've interviewed me, and it's been great every time. I'm happy to be interviewed by you whenever and anytime.
Amazing. Okay, awesome. Thanks everyone for listening to today's episode of Office Hours. If you have any questions, feedback, you can reach out to us over at huronresearch.ca/officehours, or you can just come find us in the library. We're usually at the research help desk, and you can ask for Patrick or Ryan or anyone else. Take care, everyone, and good luck this exam season.
Yeah, absolutely.
Good. Awesome. Yeah.